It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Yeah, it is Dory's Fastest 15. Todd Herman filling in for Dory Monson. Dory's going to be back Monday, and he's going to join us in the next hour. He's got a big interview he's going to do. He's going to talk with Steve Rabel. You know him from Seahawks football fame and the great radio job he and Dave Wyman do with those broadcasts. He has announced his retirement from Power 7 TV. He's going to talk to Dory. I'm sipping out of that. So Dory's also going to join us for the big lead and more content coming up in this hour. You just heard Lisa's newscast. I found this is not, I don't know, I'm going to let Sean and Nicole decide if this is hilarious or if it is a scratch your head or things that make you go, There is a screenshot, someone has taken of Seattle downtown. I think it looks to me to be maybe King County Courthouse. And there's a Seattle employee, apparently, who is recruiting people who have symptoms of the flu to go into public. We're just talking about coronavirus and the scrubbing down of a school. So the Safe Seattle on Facebook has this up. They show in pictures of Italy. They show soldiers with masks on and guns, preventing people from going where they don't want them to go. CDC saying that we all self-contain if we feel we're sick. Meanwhile, flu scientists in Seattle keep inviting people with flu-like symptoms to go to public spaces to collect their samples. They're doing it in one of Seattle's largest public buildings. I don't know. That is that a head scratcher, you guys, or is that just plain funny? Nicole, putting people out saying, hey, if you got flu symptoms, maybe it's coronavirus. Come by and spit in this jar for us.
Yeah, ew. I heard you were just supposed to stay put. I don't get it.
Yeah, well, you are supposed to say put, but they're saying in this picture, come and spit in a sample jar if you have the flu. Come into the busiest portions of Seattle and spit in a jar. So is it funny? Ew. Is it a head-scratcher, or is this man just typical Seattle?
This is a head-scratcher and also slash typical Seattle, because it seems like almost typical Seattle is almost always a head-scratcher.
True.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good way to combine those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you get a thought casserole, Sean.
Right. Can we just mail our spittle in? Can we just spit into an envelope instead? I mean, we lick the envelopes and the stamps to apply them. So can't we just do that and take the sample from there?
I don't know. Nicole, seems like a decent idea. Maybe that's against federal law, though.
Nicole, you know a lot about federal law. Why don't you chime in here?
Yeah, don't quiz me, Todd.
So speaking of things people do in public, there is a mom. There's lots of moms. This is a particular mom. She decided what she would do in order to elicit good behavior from her kids. This is the stick part of carrot and stick. Is she decided that she would have her kids do push-ups in public. And it seems also that they were doing them in a public restroom. If I'm not mistaken, that looks like a public restroom to me. So people kind of like this. Like, people kind of celebrated that this is good. Yeah, it is. It's a restroom. So they have to touch the floor, do the push-ups there. So she was at Hobby Lobby in Texas. She walked into the restroom, saw this woman, Molly, saw a calm and collected mother watching her son as he completed 10 push-ups for talking back. So head scratcher, funny, or something else. Last time we started with Nicole, Sean, what say you?
So it's in a bathroom stall. I mean, so I had my mouth washed out.
It's not in the stall. It's not in the stall. It's not in the stall. Bathroom. It's outside the stalls.
Okay. So, I was younger, I had my mouth washed out with soap, and there were some things that, parents do. It's generational. But this... I don't know, making your, how old is he, like 10 or something? Making your kid.
Maybe like
six. Looks to be 36 or so.
36, okay. No, but
no, he's sick.
Okay. No, but making your child do that in a bathroom is disgusting, and hopefully they'll learn their lesson. But also, it's better than having them stand outside on the corner with a sign that says whatever. You know how you shame your pets and your children like this by having them wear signs? I don't know, man. Yeah. It's just like, do the push-ups, wash your hands, and don't talk back.
Yeah, often, I'm actually fine.
That's
with
a
it.
Very effective thing with the pet.
Right.
You're fine. Wait, you're gonna defend this.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, I know a lot of parents, and I think you try anything to get your kids to behave, to learn how to behave in public. And push-ups, that's not child abuse. Make your kids do push-ups. I mean, yes, it's a gross floor. Wash your hands after. But I have no problem with this punishment. It's something that they don't want to do, so it will be seen as a punishment.
And also, if you don't want to put them in the bathroom, maybe send them down to where all these people are giving their flu samples. Make them get sick.
I actually don't.
People.
I mean,
that'd be
I'm
child
not,
abuse.
I'm not into public shaming or anything, but if your kid's acting up and you want to be like down and give me 10, fine. Yeah, I don't care.
Down and give me 10. There
I think
you go.
It is, I would say, better than spanking in public. And
yeah, it's better to spank in private.
Well, that's a that's another debate.
Yeah, I know. But
I watched a show once that I was back when we had a TV. I was channel surfing. And I got sucked in, just hook right through the lip. It was a show about people who have a fanatical fear of germs. I forget that particular phobia. So what they do to train people is they do this exposure therapy. So first of all, it's, hey, touch a doorknob. Then it's, let's go out and shake hands with people. Do you know what they had to do to graduate? It's on video. They had to go into a really disgusting public restroom in New York. This is going to get gross, by the way. Just heads up. It'll be gross for about 11 seconds.
Lunch.
And then
I'm down.
So they had to go with the back of their hand and first touch a public toilet. They found I think it was in the subways in New York, so it's not well cleaned. Having done that, then they had to touch the toilet seat with the palm of their hand. Then to graduate, they had to just touch the seat and then lick their hand.
What?
Oh,
that's horrible.
No.
What kind of thing is this, Todd?
That is ridiculous.
Yeah. Touching and then licking of the hand?
No.
That's not how you get over germs.
I'm just telling.
Yeah.
No. And their point was none of you died. Mm-hmm. None of you got a disease. Then
you could have.
They did the
you
really
fun thing.
Literally
could have.
Yeah.
So then they did the really fun thing. They said the average restroom, even this one, like, is cleaner than the things you've already done. Like, you got over the airplane. You want germs. Go on an airplane seat or an airplane handle or a doorknob. The fact is that the toilet seat's probably cleaner than these places. So that was what they did then. So you graduated and you thought this was the big deal. The big deal was you actually touched a doorknob.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, it reminds me of the Maury Povich show. Do you remember that show back in the day? And he would have people on sometimes with phobias, and they would have them do something like this where they're afraid of snakes or whatever, and they would touch something and do something. So Maury Povich, I just wanted to bring him into the conversation, obviously. Todd, why don't you take over?
Leaving me with that, with the Maury Povich thing?
Yeah.
I can remember.
I got about somebody specific on the show.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So you consider that. Watch this. You guys want to see a radio guy do a thing here? Watch this. So you consider that kind of a Mission Impossible. See what we did there. There is. So coronavirus, they've halted production of Mission Impossible in Venice. And the first one with Tom Cruise, that was a fine movie. It was basic adventure. You got it. But does anyone else feel like they've crafted a robotic Tom? There it is. That's the old one, isn't it?
Probably.
That's from the TV show.
Identifiable to me.
Yeah, but I can picture the groove of that and the groovy animated background.
Yeah.
So does anyone else feel like it's... Yeah, it's now an animatronic Tom Cruise in these later ones. Why does anyone else feel that way, first of all, or do you think Tom Cruise is still bringing it?
I haven't really seen any of the Mission Impossible movies. I did enjoy the show, but Tom Cruise is cool and crazy, and I like him, even though he's like a Scientologist person. But I don't know, Nicole, have you seen these movies?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen him, actually, but I think he probably does more than the average actor, but I think he's probably scaled it back because time does take its toll.
And he did break his ankle on one of those. There's like a shot of him jumping. He does his own stunts, most of them, and he broke his ankle jumping from one building to the next. So, you know, what is he, like 60 now? I mean, I'm glad he can bring it.
He is, I think. Yeah, I think he is. I've always said this about Tom Cruise. That's 60. Yeah. I mean, if you're 57, you're 60.
Much.
I think that's a rule. I say this about Cruz and his acting range. He can be angry, not so mad, and a little bit annoyed. That's it. That's sort of his range. Other than that, he's fine.
Yeah.
All right. So from Hollywood to Hollywood. Remember? Okay. Does anyone remember the name Pete Davidson? In terms of Hollywood,
yes. Yeah,
you
SNL.
Do?
I don't like this guy, but occasionally he's funny.
Don't give it away.
Oh, I'm not.
You shouldn't
I'm
give
not.
It away.
I'm not.
Because you're going to tie Maury Povich into this. I'm not going to do it. So Pete Davidson apologized to Representative Dan Crenshaw. You remember this? They made fun of Dan Crenshaw. He's a pretty conservative Republican, maybe a very conservative Republican from Texas. He is a combat veteran, hence the eye patch. He lost his eye serving the country. They made fun of him for this, or Pete Davidson did. And then, Nicole, didn't they do a thing where Crenshaw said something on Twitter and it turned into like a bro session? Didn't Crenshaw go on Saturday Night Live or do like a video with this guy where it was sort of a bro session where everyone was cool?
Yes. I believe he did the Weekend Update or whatever that segment was, is now.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
So Crenshaw sort of laughed at himself and his missing eye and kind of pointing out, hey, probably don't make fun of combat veterans for missing a limb or an eye because they lost it in battle. Maybe don't make fun of anyone for missing that. Might not be a better policy to just not do that. Pete Davidson has taken back his apology.
No, he might have lost his eye in a war or whatever. And I said whatever, and people were like, you hate America! Like, no, I just didn't want to be incorrect about how he lost his eye. Is that a crime? He could have lost his eye in war or whatever. I don't know how he lost his eye. It could have been in Afghanistan. Could have been making a sandwich. I have no idea. Sorry, I don't have Dan Crenshaw baseball cards with all of his stats and information. My bad. It's an expression. I was trying to be mindful. You know, I did not do anything for that guy. The only thing I did do, which I am guilty of and I apologize for, is I did make that guy famous and a household name for no reason, right? I did what, like, Ariana Grande did for me, right?
He's pretty obnoxious. So he has a good line once in a while, like the Ariana one.
Yeah, he's kind of got that humor is kind of like the mean humor where I've hosted trivia for a while back in the day and I would kind of do, like, some sort of, like, that sort of roast humor. And that's kind of where he's coming from, which can kind of rub people the wrong way. But I think most of the time he's all right, but he is annoying. He's kind of one of those annoying guys, though.
But that's sort of a genre, right? That you, as a comic, you are the abrasive comic.
Right.
And okay, so not to get heavy on this, because I actually found some of that actually kind of funny. But I'm not someone who lost an eye in combat, so I don't ultimately get to decide if it's funny for people who lost an eye in combat. But I guess it feels like he's sort of reclaiming who he was because he had this moment of camaraderie and dudeship and brotherdom where they agreed that, okay, maybe this went overboard. I think he's like, oh, I need relevance because now he's been played on Cairo Radio on the big show. He's probably been played around the country. So I don't know. I think it's shtick, you guys. I think that's probably shtick.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you heard I was on Facebook earlier like you do. And there's a news story about Pete Davidson where his Netflix special, he has a joke about his gay friends, and on Twitter it blew up and everyone's hating on him, but the joke's actually kind of funny. And I have a friend who's younger, and it doesn't matter what age, but she has a gay friend, and the joke is that some gay guys, he was like, I don't think my one friend's gay because he can run up on my girlfriend and touch her boobs and whatnot. Like, you look great, girl. Like, essentially, that's the joke. But my friend, yeah, she has a friend who's gay, and he does that, and she's annoyed. It's like, she gets so annoyed, and it's like Pete Davidson's making the joke that some gay guys can get a pass of touching a female just because they're gay, which they don't get a pass, and they shouldn't, unless you know that person really well, and that's a thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I get where you're coming from. And again, it's kind of a thought casserole thing. You're combining thoughts today, Sean. That's a sign of genius. Nicole, where'd you go to college?
ASU, Arizona State.
ASU. All right. Did you struggle at all or when you went financially, or did you have everything you needed at all times?
Well, I worked the whole time so that I had a little extra money. For the most part, I had some loans. I had some grandparents' help. I had some parental help. But for the most part, I was always working so that I could kind of get by.
Yeah. And I ask because there is a kind of semi-pearl clutching article that's making the rounds. 60% of Washington Community College students were food and housing insecure in the last year. They claim here 20% of respondents experienced homelessness at some point. That's a really loose phrase. As I've said on the show, I slept in my car for two or three nights. I slept on a disgusting couch with a man who was not, well, not with him, but in an apartment with a man who was physically and mentally unhealthy for like a week.
I think so, I moved in at with that point, I was five different relatives during my college career. Like, yeah. That's what you do. You survive. You call on family. You call on friends. I think that's what you do. You just try to figure out where your place is in the world during those 4 years.
Yeah, this is the point at which I think you're forced to, as the hipsters would say, adult and experiencing adulting. And I think sometimes experiencing adulting comes along with experiencing hunger, and it comes along with experiencing need. I can tell you, I learned how to go buy. Do you know the Carl Buttig that I think they still contend that's meat? The
oh,
packaged
yeah.
meat?
Buttig, that yeah. really cheap, you can get a slice for like a penny. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've heard rumors that there's actual meat product in it. I was the guy who went and did a deal with the grocery store up on Capitol Hill, said, when you're getting ready to throw that out, can you just call my work and leave a message and I'll go pick that up from you? And I was that guy. Now, I wasn't in college. I was trying to make a go of being a musician and in a band and all that. But that was my college. That was my learning in life. Are we really suggesting in this report from the Hope Center for College Community and Justice at Temple University in Philadelphia, are we really suggesting that college should be struggle-free? Right? I mean, can you imagine the catastrophe of life, of the world, if now we have to say, now we've got the college paid for, now let's make it struggle-free. Can you imagine the catastrophe?
Well, isn't that what Bernie wants? That's the plan.
Yeah. The struggle comes later. You know, Nicole, to have to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. I think I heard that once in a New York Times piece about Joe Stalin. I don't know. I think that we're meant to talk. What, Sean?
No.
The Joe Stalin reference?
Oh, no. I was agreeing with you guys. Like, we need some struggle. College, we shouldn't. You don't need to make it easy for people. Like, college is maybe easy for some and not so much for others, but you learn a lot of things. You do some drugs. Maybe you don't. Well, you make some friends. You know what I'm saying? The struggle, you need it. Because you don't want that struggle later in life.
I don't think you need the drugs.
Well, but I'm not saying you need the drugs. I'm saying that's maybe a part of the college experience. But having the struggle later in life could be pretty detrimental.
Exactly. We're meant to toil. And I have a theory that one of the challenges with kids in adolescent mental health situations in our world comes from affluence. When we went through our journey, through which we continue to walk, we found that almost everybody on our journey came from really well-heeled parents. Like, they have money. We were the poor person in our support group, still are. There's people who have homes, legitimately have homes in Beverly Hills, where their stairs are see-through glass filled with exotic fish. And the girl's used to walking up to her room looking down at exotic fish. So my theory is that people will invent toil for themselves if they don't otherwise toil. All right, it's Todd Herman in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. It's Todd Herman filling in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. Just heard from Dory, right? A little earlier. He's coming back Monday, so knee replacement surgery, no match for Dory Monson. He'll be doing the show from home for a little while, which I think isn't the home. We're not supposed to say. It's a secret location. Joining me now in the studio is our colleague from our sister station, KTTH, Jason Rantz, 3 to 6 p.m. over there. That is when he's not dominating Fox News with appearances. So welcome.
Thank you.
Tucker Carlson. I got to believe Tucker Carlson's like watching his back. You're going to take that show over, man.
I appreciate that. Yes, I love the support I get from the Tucker Carlson show and Fox News in general. They're awesome.
Yeah. Well, you spent years perfecting the hair. And I think, you know, not just the talent as a radio host, but also the hair.
It's all the
hair. That's got to be a big part. You have a terrific event I'm a little bit jealous of, I got to admit, that you've put together every single Republican candidate for governor. And I think even Iman's going to be there. And this is a debate happening tomorrow night, right?
Yeah. So tomorrow night at the Washington State History Museum, I'm moderating the KTTH gubernatorial debate. It is with the top five candidates. So we've got Tim Iman, Joshua Fried, Phil Fortunato, Lauren Culp, and Anton Sakharov. These are on this stage. One of them is going to take on Jay Inslee. And the question is, who is going to be best suited to take on Jay Inslee? And the fact of the matter is, including Republicans, we just don't know the answer yet. So for 2 hours tomorrow night, we've got them on that stage, and I'm going to be asking them some very specific questions, tough questions. It's not going to be a typical moderated debate where I say, okay, you've got 60 seconds, go, and they don't actually answer the questions. It's more going to be treated like a radio interview with all five. And that gives me the ability to say, no, you didn't really answer the question and you've just been filibustering, so why don't you respond? And I'll be able to say, hey, Tim Iman just said this, or Joshua Fried just said that. Lauren Culp, what do you think about that? So it'll actually be interactive. I'm really excited.
And if people have not heard you, 3 to 6 p.m. on KTTH's sister station, I know there's a podcast, et cetera, so people can have that anytime. You are legitimately a guy that when you interview people with whom you ideologically agree, sometimes I think you're tougher on them than you are with people that you disagree. Not that you're not tough, but you're fair. And I've heard you lay out many sort of a conundrum-like question for conservatives. So there is no getting off easy for this panel.
Absolutely. I get bored when I do interviews like that. So I don't want to do that and say, okay, we all agree sanctuary state is bad. Tell me why. Yeah, we already know. So let's get into more of the details of not just why you think what you think, but what can actually be done and are you best suited to get that job done? I think each candidate has a lot of benefits to their campaign, but there's also some drawbacks. I think Tim Iman, for example, is someone who could potentially bring some baggage to this campaign, to say the least. And he only recently announced that he was running as a Republican. So I want to know, Tim Iman, are you actually a Republican? Phil Fortunato, I want to know, specifically as a state senator, what are some of the bills that you've been able to pass? I know that he's got a lot of bills that I've really, really liked, but they all haven't passed. So what makes you think as a governor you'd be able to get this done? Lauren Culp, chief of police of Republic, really good guy on guns. I want to know where else you stand, and I want to know why a small town police chief could run this state. I think every single candidate has got some questions that they need to answer, and they've got to make the case to the Republican voters. Because let's be clear, the numbers coming in for Jay Inslee are very, very low. They're embarrassingly low, his approval. So we need to make sure that we're putting the best candidate up there to run against them, because I don't want another term with Jay Inslee.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know that Washington State can sustain itself.
We can't.
Another term of Jay Inslee. So I'm going to ask you, just then I'll do the thing that you do to people. Straightforward question. Jason Rantz, yes or no, can a Republican win the gubernatorial race this year?
The right Republican can win the gubernatorial race this year.
I didn't answer the question. Yes or no?
I mean, the answer is yes. I mean, there is no doubt, given the context of Jay Inslee as a weak candidate who's an incumbent, who already left trying to become the president in a futile move, right? Everyone was saying, don't run for president. You've got no shot in the world. But he doesn't want to be in Washington State. He's got no interest in being the governorship. He was embarrassed on the national stage, and now he limped back home trying to take a seat because he thinks he's owed it. And I think that's the context in which, yes, we can put in a Republican candidate who's going to have a very good shot at winning.
And I think I agree with you, particularly because Inslee's numbers are so low. He has 100% name recognition, but that brings me to my second point. I have deep reservations about Tim Iman being governor. Mm-hmm. Deep. In that I don't know that he's the right guy to manage an enterprise. Now, if he hired smart and he recruited smart, mm-hmm. and he kept his eye on the single prize for which Iman is known, he might be very effective. I would offer this, that in the way President Trump has surprised the world in his ability to make deals, because I'd said early on, no one knows how to deal with Trump, because Foggy Bottom, the State Department in D.C. is very predictable. What's bad for America, that's what they want. What makes them feel good at dinner parties, that's what they want. That's not what President Trump wants. Iman, you're going to get him on taxes. I don't think anyone knows where he stands on these other issues, so they'll probably find that out tomorrow in your debate. I know you'll nail him down on that. But I'll just say this, Jason. Tim Iman has 100% name recognition. And with Republicans, Tim Iman has an indelible brand. Tim Iman is the guy who stood up to an unbelievable assault from Sideshow Bob Ferguson. Ferguson is attempting to destroy that man and functionally ban him from politics, and he stood up and he's winning. So I think the Republicans, all of whom I like everybody in that field. I like Josh Fried a lot. I like them all. They better realize that of all of them, Tim Iman has the strongest, most attractive brand for a lot of Republicans. Do you think he – I would say that on the name recognition, brand recognition front, this is Tim Iman's race right now.
It is. Polling does not have him very high up yet as far as name recognition, which comes to a shock to many of us who talk about him on this station and our station, KTTH, because he's always in the news. And so I think it's very important to realize that Tim Iman, I think, is more well-known in Western Washington than he is in Eastern Washington. Now, I think his policies are well-known. I think when you say, oh, he's the guy behind 976, people will say, oh, okay, yeah, I like him. But you do, you're right. I don't know where he stands on a lot of issues outside of taxes. He says he's a Republican, so I'm presuming I know where he stands, but we're going to be very specific, and I want to know if he's the strongest conservative on gun rights, if he's the strongest conservative on the sanctuary state status, on heroin injection sites, on tackling homelessness. I think everybody wants to know that, but you're right that he has higher name. He certainly has higher name recognition than some of the other candidates who are running. But I do think, because I've interviewed every single one of them many times, the more people hear from them, the better likelihood they're going to start to like them. And so the question is, who are they going to settle with?
Yeah, I think they're all likable. I mean, Tim in his own way is likable. Josh Fried's done great things. And I'm not yet endorsing anybody in this race. I might make a pre-endorsement. I might choose someone. Although I generally don't do that because I think that's unfair. So the debate is tomorrow night. Where is it?
So it's at the Washington State History Museum in Tacoma. Bad news for folks is we're out of tickets. Good news for folks is I've got a pair of tickets that I'm going to give away on my show today at 3 o'clock. But we are going to broadcast the entire debate with limited interruptions on Monday at 3 p.m. on AM 770 KTTH. So people who are wondering where everybody stands, where Tim Iman stands on all these issues, you'll be able to listen to it with limited interruptions Monday at 3 p.m. And again, today at 3 p.m. on 770, I'm going to give away a pair of tickets so folks can actually attend.
All right. So Jason Rantz, our sister station, KTTH, joins us. Follow him on Twitter, at Jason Rantz. Appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely.
All right. That's it. Jason Rantz, KTTH, my colleague. I'll be starting there Monday, 6 a.m. Thanks for coming on. Dory Monson Show rolls along. Todd Herman filling in. Just around the corner, Dory Monson joins us on his own program. He continues to recover from knee replacement surgery. I get to do this for one more day. And it's been really fun filling in on the big show. So Dory takes it all back over. Coming up Monday, he's going to join us in just a few minutes. Steve Rabel announced that he is retiring from Cairo 7 News, the news partner of Cairo Radio. So they're going to talk about that and maybe some other things. Steve is going to stick around for the Seahawks broadcast, and Dory and he have a pretty tight relationship around that. So it'll be an interesting conversation. Dory's coming up. The Dow. Wow. Okay. So if you're invested in the stock markets, and that is if you have a savings account, if you have a 401k, a 403b, if you have an interest-bearing checking account, if you pay for insurance, all those instruments are in one way or another tied to or invested in the stock markets. You have a pension plan that is tied into the stock market in some way, depending on the percentage of monies the plan administrators have put into that. It had its biggest turnaround from an intraday high today. So it fell about 1,200 points. That is a pretty remarkable fall. They're tying this to the coronavirus, because the world's supply chain, the world's countries have made a decision that they want all their stuff produced in one country. So they decided we want everything produced in China. So our insulin is produced there. 93 or so percent of insulin for this country is produced in China. iPhones, obviously produced there. And everybody, you know, working on the iPhones, very happy they really enjoy their jobs, and it's not at all a sweatshop, and don't worry, there's no slave labor in China. They never do that because, of course, the people at Apple would never allow such a thing because they are, you know, not virtue signalers. They're very serious about that. So the supply chain locked to China, and this is tied into the coronavirus. Jay Inslee made an unusual step. He actually spoke out and said, don't panic. He's speaking to the press around the coronavirus. Jay Inslee, I guess it's fair. You know, he still has the title. He still has a business card, Governor of Washington State.
Nobody's panicking. We shouldn't be driven by fear. We're listening to the national, international, and our local health officials who are telling us that we need to take this very seriously, and that's the approach that we're taking.
How prepared are we to handle this?
As prepared as we can be, and I think that's the right approach. So I'm meeting with my staff basically on a daily basis. Yesterday I talked to our experts about this, about how we can build capacity to have more people available to do the research on people who have had contacts, so that if we do get a person with an infection, we can make sure we monitor everyone they've had a contact with.
Right. So if we're keeping track here on the Dory Monson show, we talked at the top of the hour about the fact that SeattleFlu.org is working in the largest public building in Seattle, asking people with a sign, if you have flu-like symptoms, come into public, come into this well-trafficked building and give us a sample. I think it's of your saliva. So that seems to me really rock solid prep from the powers that be here. And certainly Inslee doesn't have any power to stop. Well, actually, he does. He's the governor. He can say, don't ask people to spit in a cup if they have flu symptoms. But then that would be actually doing something versus talking about it. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is a woman who is extremely photogenic. Oh, she was a bartender, too, and such. So now she's in Congress. She wrote, Mike Pence literally does not believe in science. It's utterly irresponsible to put him in charge of U.S. coronavirus response as the world sits on the cusp of a pandemic. This decision could cost people their lives. Pence's past decisions already have. So Mike Pence does not believe that science exists. That's bizarre because you could read about the scientific. So I was thinking that she meant science as a discipline. What she means is he doesn't believe with her point of view. She is, of course, an ideological cousin to Jay Inslee, although she's far more successful in politics than Jay Inslee will ever be. Far more influential than Jay Inslee has ever been or will ever be. And she's photogenic. And she used to be a bartender. And her comment about science reminds me now of Inslee. So here's Jay Inslee saying, nobody panic. We're as prepared as we can be. We think that's the right approach. You know, I'm a doodler. How is it that he can say that about this supposed pending pandemic while telling you that you're going to die in the next 3 years because of the weather and telling everybody that we need to restructure our entire economy so that only Tom Steyer can own energy companies and telling us that the world is melting and we must listen to a very, very angry a 14-year-old from the Netherlands on all our policies. Panic there, not here. That's Jay Inslee. Dory Monson joins us on the Dory Monson Show with an exclusive interview with Steve Rabel, who announced his retirement from Kara 7 TV News. That's just around the corner as the big show, as Dory would say, rolls along.